We're exploring the Fair Pay to Play Act here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. California passed legislation earlier this year allowing college athletes to hire agents and to make money through endorsement deals. The NCAA followed up by saying, you know what, we'll ask our athletic divisions to consider updates to bylaws and policies. Do you think college athletes should be able to make money through endorsement deals? What questions do you have about Title IX and the status of gender equity in college sports today? Are you or were you a student athlete? Is your sport supported enough by your university? What do you think about having earning potential? We're at 800-642-1234. Ellen Starowski is a professor in the Department of Sport Management at Drexel University, and her expertise is college athlete rights, Title IX, and gender equity. Her most recent book is called Women and Sport, Continuing a Journey of Liberation and Celebration. Ellen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, right now, college athletes do not receive any sort of payment for playing sports other than scholarships, if you look at it that way. But what do NCAA bylaws say about athletes receiving money for playing sports?
Well, I think in a nutshell, NCAA regulations largely prohibit athletes from receiving benefit from the use of their names, images, and likenesses, and engaging in endorsement deals. And so these recent legislative actions would allow athletes to realize their potential value in the market.
Does this loosening up, have you seen it coming over time? Has it been mounting, or was there ever a time where athletes could get paid?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, back in the day, back in the early 1900s, athletes did have the opportunity for tobacco deals on campus or to run franchises on campus. And Walter Camp, who was the father of American football, actually promoted that and made sure that his top players had the opportunity to make that kind of money. And so what we've seen over time is we've seen athletes' rights to basic economic equality gets stripped away by NCAA rules.
You've said that the NCAA has stonewalled the issue of whether to pay college athletes to play for years. What do you find troubling about the policies and bylaws you see right now?
Well, I think this is just a fundamental issue about economic fairness. Here we have a multi-billion dollar entertainment industry, which competes with professional sports in every respect, except for the fact that it precludes athletes from realizing their market value. And so what these legislative actions are doing is they're recognizing this economic unfairness and doing what should be done in terms of restoring to citizens the opportunity to reap the benefits of their work.
So California's Pay to Play Act goes into effect in 2023. Can you describe what this compensation means and how it's different from paying athletes to play sports outright?
Yeah. Effectively, the California bill takes us down the path of making progress on this issue by allowing athletes to receive endorsement deals outside of the athletic department. So if an athletic department has a deal with Nike, for example, an athlete would not be able to have that kind of endorsement deal with Nike, but they would be able to have deals with other entities, and they would also be able to have a deal, for example, with a gaming company, for instance. So that's effectively what the California bill is allowing athletes to do in 2023.
And gaming would be huge. I mean, that's a whole nother realm for what is possible when it comes to images and likenesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important that we be talking about this in this particular moment in time, because, you know, we're now in an age where we have individuals who are social media influencers, and so many athletes at every level have the capacity potentially to really engage in that marketplace, and they're being restricted from doing so because of NCAA rules. So I think it's really wise for colleges and universities to take this moment and to really reexamine what they're doing, because this is going to happen one way or another, and it would be better, frankly, if they engaged in good faith to make this happen more seamlessly than what it is right now.
Does the NCAA have the power to take California's law or any other state to court if they don't like what they see?
Yeah, the NCAA has intimated that they might go to court with California on constitutional grounds. I think they'd argue a Commerce Clause issue where California can't impair the NCAA's ability to engage in interstate commerce. I think that's probably the argument they might make. But I think what's really interesting is the fact that there are 16 different states right now that either have a law that's similar to California's that's coming through or is anticipated. I know in Wisconsin there's talk about a law in your state. And of course, earlier in the week, Senator Murphy from Connecticut also announced that there's going to be a working group in Congress looking at this issue as well and looking at potential federal legislation.
We're talking with Ellen Starowski. She's a professor in the Department of Sport Management at Drexel University, where she studies gender equity, Title IX, college athlete rights, exploitation of college athletes. You can join in. Are you a coach? Could compensating athletes help attract players to your team? Or do you think athletes shouldn't be paid? Are you a parent of a college athlete? What rights should college athletes have? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Ellen, what might this do to the pursuit of athletes, to in terms of recruitment and keeping athletes? What might laws like this do?
Well, I think one of the reasons why so many states have begun to offer or put forward or talk about putting forward bills is that they know that there might be a recruiting advantage for schools in some states that allow athletes to do this and in other states where they don't. So I think there's a recognition of that recruiting advantage. But here's the thing, though. I think anytime we're confronted with something new, there's a lot of fear around what's going to happen. And the plain fact of the matter is that that there are already pay scales within the college sports system. There are full athletic scholarships versus partial athletic scholarships. Some athletes receive what are called book awards, where they only receive support for books. They don't receive a full scholarship. So it's not as if there isn't already this kind of arrangement within the system. And the system has been incredibly adept over the years at adjusting and adapting, and they'll do so with this as well. The fundamental issue here is that they'll just be doing it in a much fairer manner in terms of empowering athletes and recognizing what those athletes mean to this economic system.
Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I as a season ticket holder to Badger football here in Madison, I think that after what I've seen going on over the last 20 years, pretty much everything is for sale at the university right now in terms of trying to produce more income for the university. Meanwhile, you've got these kids who are basically being exploited. Yes, they're getting their education and such, but oftentimes they don't have enough money to go out and live and, you know, have any kind of social life and things of that nature. I think the way the NCAA is going about this, though, is probably going to come back and bite them on the bottom, because by bringing in the private sector, I think they're opening up a Pandora's box in terms of sponsorships that's going to only benefit the few. which what I think would be a better way for them to go ahead is to just admit that universities, at least the large ones in the Division I realm, are making hundreds of millions of dollars off of these kids, and they ought to just pay them some kind of decent stipend across the board so that they can reap some of the benefits from their work.
And I'll just add there, Steve, that UW-Madison was the 11th most profitable NCAA sports program in 2017 and to 2018 school year, raking in nearly $152 million. Ellen, your thoughts there on a across-the-board stipend?
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated Steve's comments. And here's the thing for me, that one of the reasons why the conversation is so fractured is that we don't have a group that is actually representing athletes. The NCAA and the conferences do not represent athlete interests. No one on the other side of the bargaining table that represents the interests of athletes. And so so his sensibility around, you know, well, what could be done collectively for athletes? A lot could be done collectively for athletes, but what has to happen in order for that to occur is there needs to be some kind of an athlete association that will do that. Because in the absence of that, it's just the NCAA negotiating with itself. And where I think this really needs to go is I think that we need to have players associations for college athletes that will negotiate out these kinds of rules that will create floors in terms of like basic provisions, and then also allow for additional benefits depending on level and so forth.
We're talking about the future of athlete pay with Ellen Starowski as our guide. She's a professor in the Department of Sport Management at Drexel University. You can join in. Are you a parent of a college athlete? What rights should college athletes have? Do you support athletes receiving compensation? Do you support Wisconsin passing a bill to compensate college athletes? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Ellen Starowski here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we've been talking about college athletes and the Fair Pay to Play Act that prohibits athletic associations and conferences from denying athletes the opportunity to profit from their names, to profit from their images and likenesses. And this law is gaining traction straight across the country. Should institutions be putting more or less into their athletic programs, women's or men's programs, and who benefits? What do you make about paying college athletes? Join in 800-642-1234. Ellen Starowski is a professor in the Department of Sport Management at Drexel University, and she stays with us. So, Ellen, how could paying athletes impact Title IX and the gender equity law that we have today in sports?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think given the way that the California bill is written, the arrangements would be outside of the athletic department and outside of the institution. So Title IX would not reach into those agreements. But the way that I think we should be thinking about this as we walk down this path is that I would argue there's an incredible amount of opportunity in terms of women's sports that that the system has not yet really capitalized on. And for example, if you look at an athlete like Caitlin Ohashi, Caitlin was the gymnast from UCLA who last spring just had this incredible performance. You know, she ended up getting an ESPY for best video moment of the year and best play of the year. And that video moment yielded over 100,000 views just last spring. And so, because of NCAA rules, she was not in a position to be able to benefit from that moment. And there are many, many other circumstances like that where I think female athletes have economic power that they're not able to navigate as a result of these rules. And frankly, I don't think that the system has been set up to unlock the power of that. So I think actually enabling athletes to have the capacity to go after endorsement deals will actually be a benefit and will lift up opportunities for women in sport.
Let's bring in Jamie now, joining us from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I was a student athlete myself. I come from a long line of basketball coaches. It's not the profession I chose, but I'm still around it a lot. And I know you deal with gender equity in sports, and I'm glad we're having this movement towards fair pay and things like that. But I wonder if that might have a wider reach and a wider effect on things like retention on teams among women. I know that scholarships are often held over their head based on, performance or any other issues. Coaches will often just clean house or get rid of a player if they did not fit with their team the way that they expected them to. There's not a whole lot of accountability on the coach's part. I didn't know with Congress taking this up and with more rights kind of being at the center here, if that might be something that would get attention too, if you had any insight on that.
I'm so, so happy that you raised this issue because I think the economic piece of this discussion is really connected to a much larger issue. And the much larger issue is that athletes really do not have the kind of power that they need to really operate within this domain. A previous caller referred to this system as being an exploitative system. And we do have female athletes who are really beginning to speak up about their own mistreatment. We've had case after case after case during this past year in particular. And this is where I think we need to acknowledge the fact that the entities that have directed the way that college sport has been built as an industry, the NCAA and the conferences, those are institutional entities. No athlete is a member of the NCAA, for example. And as a result of that, we really have this incredible imbalance of power. And that's where we really need to have a players association that can advocate for athletes and can really educate athletes about what the rules mean, what they're being asked to do, and also to provide avenues for them when things go awry, for them to have substantive representation to help push back against a system that otherwise is going to continue to roll over them unless that advocacy is in place.
We're talking with Ellen Starowski. She's a professor in the Department of Sport Management at Drexel University, where she studies gender equity and Title IX, college athletes' rights, and the exploitation of college athletes. Ellen, racial disparities exist in both professional and college sports. Do you think the issue of paying college players, what impact could that have on racial disparities?
Well, I think part of this discussion should be viewed as a civil rights issue. We do have, there's no question that we have in the top 1% that generate the most amount of revenue for the system. The top 1% of that workforce are predominantly African-American players, and we've got a power base which is white. And we know that we've had racial issues throughout the system for many, many years. And part of what is a part of this overall conversation is addressing all of these issues in tandem. So I think that we have a situation where we've become very, very accustomed to dictating to this largely African-American workforce, what the terms and conditions are going to be that govern their lives, their safety, their access to education, and all of that needs to be unlocked. And that means access to power, both in terms of representation as well as money.
It's interesting, too, that you call this a workforce and not college, student athletes or college players. That's very intentional, I would imagine, that you are calling this a workforce.
Well, this is a workforce, and the NCAA has been working from the 1950s to the present to persuade us otherwise. They adopted the term student-athlete to avoid having to pay worker compensation. That was an intentional PR decision on their part. And when you just look at the basic construction of what an athletic scholarship is, it's clearly compensation for performance on the field. So this all of these issues really are about work.
What happens when an athlete gets injured, gets hurt, cannot return to the field? Can they retain that contract, that athletic scholarship?
Yeah. You really need to read the fine print on this because in terms of the NCAA rules, there's one stipulation that says that an athlete cannot be let go from their team because of an injury. But you really need to look at what the terms are around that athletic scholarship and how long of a period it's awarded for. And typically those scholarships come up for renewal at the end of every year. And so they may not lose that scholarship, in the weeks or months after the injury, but they may not be renewed after the term of that scholarship has come to an end. And so athletes still do get dropped from their teams because they've been injured. And then, of course, what we also have is we have this whole healthcare crisis relative to athletes having to pay out-of-pocket expenses and long-term having to deal with health care costs associated with injuries that they've incurred.
Well, Ellen, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Kate, for the opportunity and for your callers.
Ellen Starowski is a professor in the Department of Sport Management at Drexel University, where she studies equity laws on women in sports, and her most recent book is called Women and Sport. Just ahead, the chairs of the House investigating committees are expected to unveil articles of impeachment against President Trump at a press conference here at 8 this morning. You can hear live NPR coverage right here starting at 8 on Wisconsin Public Radio and online at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.